gentlemen, welcome to episode 107 of season 11 of Movie Our Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we cover here our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off his three-episode arc, or stint, however you want to look at it, is Darren, a former MXM podcaster who loves Tom Hanks, but has surprisingly never seen Band of Brothers before. So welcome back to the show, Darren.
Yeah, and I think that's what made me uniquely qualified. I mean, I'm, you know, I'm as American as most of this cast, in that I'm definitely not American. You know, out of the like 70 or so guys in this, I'm sure 50 of them weren't American.
That's right.
Like in the last episode, we had Dale Dye, but I probably think possibly the only American set other than Ron Spence.
He's not I mean, Colin Hanks is American.
yeah, I guess. So, you know, uniquely qualified, I would say, to talk about this, having only seen up to this point 10 minutes of the entire show.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. You know, so it's just the way it is. So, episode 107 begins with Spears trying to figure out how to get the ball rolling, and ends with everyone ready to move out. So we ended things yesterday with Sink basically congratulating Winters and all the men below him for a successful patrol, and wants to make sure that they're gonna, you know, do their work again, or do their magic again, I guess you could say. And Sink then walked away. And then we have Nixon and Winters along with Spears just standing there staring out across this river. And Spears said, "So I'll brief him now, sir." And Winters says, "Nope, no, I'll do it." Which is a little strange that you know, Winters is willing to is interested in doing this because, you know, he is the battalion commander. You know, so it's not necessarily something that he should be doing, but he still wants to do it. Then the three of them walk off, and, you know, Webster then shows up inside once again, and Webster gives a little bit of an intro and says, "Sarge, they're on their way in." And then as the three officers show up, Martin goes, "Ten hut." And Winter goes, "Martin, sir." And he looks at everyone around the room. He goes, "At ease." And he turns to Grant and he goes, "Is this everybody, Grant?" And he goes, "Sir." And he goes, and then Winters then begins to brief the men or congratulate them, however you want to look at it. And he goes, "You men did an excellent job last night. I'm proud. I just saw Colonel Sink. He's proud too. He's so proud he wants you to do another patrol across the river tonight. Any moment now, the outpost we hit last night will go up in flames. Martin?" He goes, "Yes, sir. It means we'd have to venture further into town this time." And then he turns to Spears and goes, "Captain Spears, do you have the map, please?" He goes, "Yes." He goes, "Sergeant Grant." And, you know, Grant comes and you know, gives him the map. And Winter starts going over the map. And he goes, "We have enemy movement here, here, and here. Which means this is our new house target here." He points to a different spot on the map. And then he goes, "We recovered all the boats, so we'll be setting off from the same place we did last night." And Martin looks at him and goes, "We're not changing the plan any, sir?" He goes, "Nope, plan is the same. It will be 0200 hours instead of 0100. Is that clear?" Everyone goes, "Yes, sir." He goes, "Okay, good, because I want you all to get a full night's sleep tonight. Which means in the morning, you will report to me that you made it across the river into German lines, were unable to secure any live prisoners. Understand?" Everyone looks at him and goes, "Yes, sir." He goes, "Good. Look sharp for tomorrow. We're moving off the line." So it's very interesting that Winters was able to make this type of decision and not get any flack for it. Again, you know, here in the book, he's basically letting the cat out of the bag of what he did. But the bottom line is that you'd think that they would know if they didn't go across the river. Think's not going to find out from somebody that know, there were no extra shots fired or things like that. You know, it's a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, I look, I thought it's funny because obviously, you know, in the previous 5 minutes, we get Dale Dye pop in and say, "You're going back out because you were good," and then, you know, we see the kind of frustration, you know, between Ron Livingston and Damian Lewis, and they're not, you know, immediately Damian Lewis is like, "We're not doing that. We're just going to say we did it," which I think is kind of funny because, like, you know, again, like the title of the show, we're expecting like these guys to be committed to the cause, and I find it funny that this guy's like, "Look, we've done enough. Like I'm
No,
throwing
well,
the in here."
no. It's not that Winters thinks he's done enough. I think Winters looks at it and says, "Okay, this is going to be a complete waste of time because we got
Yeah.
no information from these Germans, and why risk the lives of soldiers, you
Yeah,
know,
but I
in this type
mean,
of situation?"
getting those two prisoners was enough. And it was enough for them to realize that there's no point catching more German prisoners at this point because they're not going to give them any information that's going to lead to anything useful. So it's just a waste of resources. You know, that's what I mean by enough. Like, there's no need for this to happen. So everyone get some sleep and we'll pretend that we did it. I thought it was quite funny. I was like, yeah, that's the kind of, and I think he gets no like pushback or flack from anyone because I think they're all on board immediately, aren't
No,
they? Like,
the men wouldn't give him any pushback. I'm talking about the fact that,
yeah.
you know, the higher ranked people, you know, including Sink, might do something like that.
Yeah, but at the same
Again,
time,
the book will explain it, and we'll talk about that shortly. But yeah.
yeah. I mean, to me, it just made sense for them to be like, you know. I mean, the only like the thing that kind of is sitting in the back of my head, and I'm sure you've seen it, is a Blackadder Goes Forth. Yeah, and so, like the kind of which is obviously set in the First World War, and it's more about the futility of war. But like in that, there are a few times where they just don't do the war. They just sit to one side and go, "It's not worth the effort, so we're not going to do it." So I kind of instantly understood this of like, yeah, they we. Like we were successful on the previous patrol, but success basically yields nothing. So why are we gonna, you know, go out at 2 o'clock in the morning to like try and attack some Germans who probably at this point have had enough as well? You know,
Right.
what information are you gonna get out of these? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, shot in this country, in my country, but you know, clearly they're just in the middle of nowhere in Germany. They're not anywhere important, and there's nobody coming past. There's nobody taking part in this that is going to give them any important information. So I instantly understand. But yeah, I mean, there was a thing in my head where I was like, well, surely someone would find out. But you know, I guess, you know, it was written in a book and they've turned it into a TV show. So I guess, I mean, was this the point where the higher ups found out that this, you know, reading the book, was that the moment where they realized
I don't
this?
know. Again,
Yeah.
that's the question.
Yeah, like was that the point where they realized that the operation never actually took place, and that was the reason casualties and no more prisoners?
Again, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I know what it says in the book, but the book doesn't really explain what happened afterwards. It just explains the story. I mean, again, Winters sees his job as being the savior and protector of the men of Easy Company. So, you know, he saw that Jackson was killed and, you know, realizes that it was a unnecessary death. You know, not that there are necessary deaths, but I'm saying, you know, in war, you know, there are actions that need to be taken that are more worthwhile than others. And, you know, the risk and the cost, you know, of lives for freedom is one thing, but you know the way that you know, but you know, when you're given orders, you don't know whether what you're doing is something because you know, because it's for the greater good or for not. You don't know, but you know, the idea is you have to follow orders. So you know, the fa and knowing how much of a stickler Winters is for rules and regulations makes it even crazier the fact that he made this decision because of the fact that, okay, as far as he's concerned, you know, he wants to save his men. and saving his men is more important to him than following the procedural orders and things like that.
Yeah. And I mean, from other films, like, you know, we've seen, you know, what happens on the other side, you know, like the Nazis, like a lot of soldiers kept following orders to the point where it didn't make any sense anymore. Like they, you know, they were just wandering around the street shooting at random things. They weren't really an army anymore. Just,
correct.
You know, at a point they were just kids in uniform and following the orders of a madman.
Right.
And I think on the other side, people kind of
following the orders of,
you know, following the orders of Tony Hopkins. But yeah, so to me, yeah, like, you know, having not seen the rest of the show, it feels fine for Damian Lewis to come in and be like, we're not going to do this.
Right.
You know, like you say, he's protecting his men, like another point is there.
Correct. Which also shows the type of commander that he is, that he's willing to risk his own career and future by, you know, making this decision in order to save his men and not sending them on a useless patrol, as far as he's concerned.
Yeah.
Right. So in the book on page 193, so it says, Colonel Sink was so delighted with the successful patrol, he ordered another one for the next night. In the meantime, however, it snowed and then turned colder. The snow was frozen on top, crunchy, noisy. The cold air had cleared out the sky and the moon was shining. Winters thought a patrol under such circumstances was suicidal, so he decided to disobey orders. Think and a couple of staff officers came to 2nd Battalion CP to observe. They had a bottle of whiskey with them. Winter said he was going down to the riverbank to supervise a patrol. When he got to the outpost, he told the men to just stay still. With the whiskey working on him, Think would soon be ready for bed. The patrol could report in the morning that it had gotten across the river and into German lines, but had been unable to get a live prisoner. Then it quotes a paragraph from the book The Warriors, from Glenn Gray, written by Glenn Gray, on page 189. It says, to be required to carry out orders in which he does not believe, given by men who are frequently far removed from the realities with which the orders deal, is the familiar lot of a combat soldier. It's a great boon of frontline positions that disobedience is frequently possible, since supervision is not very exact, where danger of death is present. Many a conscientious soldier has discovered he could reinterpret military orders in his own spirit before obeying them. So I think that gives a nice out for Winters, yeah, in this case. You know, the fact that he said that, you know, that they allude to the fact that Sink is the one who's going to be getting drunk and he's going to be sleeping well means that, you know, what I said before about the fact that he's not going to hear gunfire or rockets, it's because he's going to be fast asleep, not because they didn't happen. Yeah. You know, that type of thing. But what I love here in the book, it explains that the reason Winters decided to do this was because it was a full moon, a clear, you know, it was a clear sky, and if they were walking in the snow, it would make a lot of noise. So, I mean, it goes along with what we were saying about the fact that he's trying to protect his men, but these are, you know, this makes his decision even more logical by knowing, information.
Yeah, it turns it into like a tactical, like, thing. Like, it's like, yeah, like, normally, if it was a dark night and maybe muddy, they could use the stealth. But because it's a clear night with snow and it's going to be, you know, crunchy noise, they've got like a tactical reason to not do the patrol.
Correct.
Next to the idea that it's not going to yield in any way,
right.
even if it was a success, you know, what are we going to shoot a bunch of bullets and, you know, like it's not really going to achieve anything.
Right. And at this point, you know, Winters leaves the room and we start hearing the men chattering among themselves. And one of them goes, did I fucking hear that right? Another one goes, yeah, he's a really good man. Another one goes, moving off the line? The shot changes and we're back outside with Nixon, Winters, and Spears. And Nixon goes, the only way to fight a war, don't bother writing this up. I'll take care of it. You know, he's more than happy to be dealing with this one.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we get a tiny bit of reaction from the men there, but like, I think, it, yeah, you know, if someone comes in and says, look, they want you to go out 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, probably someone's gonna die, but instead we're just gonna, you know, wait for the guy to get drunk and then everyone's gonna sleep. You know, I like, yeah, it seems like something that you wouldn't believe, but, you know, they kind of immediately, yeah, sure, you know.
Yeah.
I'd rather be sleeping than out cold at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right, that's true. And then Winters responds, okay, because this is actually a callback to the fact when in part five where Winters was supposed to write up reports and he's terrible at it, and Nixon gives him advice on how to do it. So, you know, here, this is Nixon basically saying, I'll write it for you this time, because this is going to be fun. It's going to be fun making up this information. You know, it's not going to be tedious. It's going to be as fun as I want it to be. And then Nixon looks at him and goes, I think you might be onto something here, Dick. And as he says that, the house across the way explodes. And then Spears looks over to Jones and goes, Lieutenant Jones. He goes, sir, join us all at Company CP. The shot changes again. Now, it's interesting that they're inviting Jones with them, but I guess it goes along with the fact that you know, they want something private just for all of the you know, all the officers.
Yeah.
And you know, it works well. And then we're at the entrance of the CP. At this point, we have Winters talking to you know, all the officers around him. We see that Nixon's there. We see Spears. We see Lipton is with them. We see Jones, and we also see that Welsh is back. And then Winters says, First Sergeant Lipton, sir, your honorable discharge as an enlisted man, you know, just hands it to him. Which
is this Donnie Wahlberg?
Yes, this is Donnie Wahlberg.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because yeah, obviously this is the first time I'm seeing Donnie Wahlberg suddenly appear in this yes. TV show,
yeah.
and then immediately go back home. I'm assuming that's
No. He's getting a promotion.
Oh no.
He's getting a promotion.
Okay.
We're about to get there, and we hear in the background, just keep him coming, Luz, and. Then Winters goes, and battlefield commission as a second lieutenant. And we hear, look what we have here, boys. And Welsh shows up and goes, hey, pal. And Winters then claps Lipton on the back and goes, congratulations, Carwood. Thank you, sir. Nixon goes, Lip, congratulations. He goes, thanks. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Welcome back, sir. And Welsh looks at him and goes, that's Harry to you. Congratulations. He goes, thanks, Harry. He goes, then Nixon turns to him and goes, hey, Harry, I didn't expect to see you this soon. Figured you'd be nursing that scratch for another month or two. So he got injured in Bastogne in the previous episode, and he's already back with them. And then Welsh goes, well, did you miss me, Lois? And then Winters turns to Jones and goes, Lieutenant Jones, regiment has seen fit to promote you to first lieutenant. They want you on staff up there. Congratulations and good luck. He goes, thank you, sir. He goes, dismissed. So again, I find it very funny that you know, the same day that Lipton is getting his promotion, they're promoting another guy who just showed up. And I mean, the reason they did is there are numerous reasons. The book explains that it has something to do with the fact that he was a West Point man. So at the end of page 192, it says, Lieutenant Jones, by all accounts, performed well on his first patrol, meaning, apparently, he wisely let Mercier make the decisions. Within a week, Jones was gone, having been promoted to first lieutenant. After one patrol, Lieutenant Foley commented, Jones was a West Pointer, a member of the WPPA, the West Point Protective Association, known by the ring they all wore. It don't mean a thing if you don't have that ring. Jones moved on to a staff job at regiment. Malarkey wrote, it was rumored that the conclusion of the war was fast approaching and that West Pointers who would staff the peacetime army were being protected. So again, it's you know, it's not that Jones did a great job, it's that, okay, you know, the war's about to end. he's going to be staying in the service because he's, you know, he signed on basically. So
Yeah.
it's, I mean, I don't know how they would have been able to fit that into the show and explain that to us, but I like the fact that the book explains the reason behind it.
Yeah, in the show it's very quick. Like Donnie Wahlberg comes in, someone gives him something, then Colin Hanks gets promoted, and then, like, you know, for me, I was like, okay, I get like, obviously, I'm not realizing that Colin Hanks only just kind of come into this, and that Donnie Wahlberg
Oh,
previously been in this.
very much so. He
So
was
I'm just,
the main
yeah,
character in the previous episode in part six. So yeah.
yeah. So to me, it feels a bit quick, but like one guy's coming in, another guy's coming in, and they're both getting promotions, and then that's it. And you know, like you say, the narrator comes in and explains about West Point. And then there was something about, are we about to get to Damian Lewis get
Well,
some
we're not there
OT?
yet. We're not there yet. We're getting
Yeah,
closer to
yeah. So, but
that.
yeah, but it's like it, like you said, like it seems like there is a lot of like people knowing the war is about to finish, and so a lot of people seem to be getting like moved around a little bit, like on the board, like to kind of put to better positions. But yeah, it's not really explaining it. And as somebody who obviously hasn't read the book or seen the rest of the show, I was just a little bit moved by the quick promotions that are happening. I assumed it had something to do with the patrol, but yeah, if Colin Hanks has only just arrived, he's getting promoted quick. It makes sense, you know. He's somebody who I mean, I like out of West Point, how many years did they have to do? Like. Like a set period of time that they were to
I
serve
don't
for,
know
like,
what
yeah, you know, because that would make sense if, like, you know, they've paid for his education at West Point, so obviously he pays that back by doing, I don't know, like 5 years or something in the military, and that's how that works. So at the same time, obviously, he's
Right.
going to be sticking around. You know, want to keep it in place. Again, they've spent money on his education, so they you don't want him to go out and get shot like 5 minutes into the war. It seems like, you know, that would be a waste of time and money at this particular point. Where obviously a lot of the other guys, I'm assuming, would, you know, be drafted. But like they said in the previous episode, you know, and you know, you see that obviously a slightly more frivolous film, but. You know, Captain America, the first Avenger, you see that with Steve Rogers, like trying desperately to get into the military by flying. So yeah, it makes sense that if somebody has spent their time, you know, being paid for effectively to kind of get an education, it seems odd that send them to the front and have them, like, you know, massacred
Well,
in a
again, part of the whole idea is to
know.
have to have some combat under your belt type of thing.
Yeah. Obviously, you've still got to see combat, but at the same time, not in an area where somebody's gonna, you know,
Right.
get
That's true.
you killed. You know, there's a fine line to kind of put someone in some in a certain amount of danger, but not too much danger that you're losing them. And I think this also contrasts a little bit, like the, you know, with the loss of Jackson. Like, you know, like we said, you know, dying in a basement in the middle of nowhere and being told, you know, by the military that. It was a good death and it was worthwhile. Whereas, you know, we know that's not true. And so were Colin Hanks to be killed, you know, that would be a pointless death, would give him
Correct.
his death.
Right. And one of the things I love is while this whole scene is going on, we see the trio of Luz Talbert and Webster all just looking in, you know, on this I guess secret ceremony type of thing. You know, both you know, giving
Yeah.
Lipton his battlefield commission and the transfer of Jones. So, you know, it's a nice way to portray this whole thing. And then Luz says to Webster, "Looks like you lost another platoon leader, huh? How Webb?"
I do find it funny, like, yeah, like Colin Hanks hasn't got much experience. He's got the education, so he immediately gets promoted. And yeah, people noting that, yeah, we've lost another man, but not like. Not really, is it? Like they haven't really lost him. Like, was he ever
Well,
really,
no, they
you
lost
know, part of it?
if you're counting the number of men that you have, you know, let's say you have 20 men in the platoon or 30 men in the platoon, okay? What Luz is basically saying that, okay, now we're back to 29. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
the missions and everything that they're doing here, you know, you're going to split up based on the number of men you have. The less men you have, the more patrols men will have to do, as opposed to splitting them up properly. You know, that type of thing.
That is my
right. And Lipton is not going on to be the commander of the second platoon. So I get, as far as I know. So it's not as if he's getting that position and then they're moving Jones away. Maybe they are. Maybe that's, but it's not really explained specifically if Lipton's the one who's now going to be taking over that small position that Jones just filled. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe we're meant to infer that from the way they talk about it here. And then the shot changes and Webster leaves the building, and we're back to more Webster narration. He goes, "So a second patrol never happened. Word was Captain Nixon wrote up a bogus report, and regiment never got wise." And then, you know, in I'm adding in. In quotations, until they read this book or saw this, you know, miniseries.
Yeah.
And then he says, "As we pulled out of Hagenau, many of us in Easy Company felt that a corner had been turned, and we all might make it home alive." So again, it's nice that, you know, they're feeling this hope that we're you know, that they're reaching towards the end of the war, which works well.
Yeah, and like I said, when the previous narration comes in, you know, to reveal the, you know, the contrast of the death and the letter, obviously this one comes in to kind of confirm, you know, what actually happened. Like you say, there's a bit more to it in terms of like the tactics, but to kind of almost get one over and say, yeah, we didn't do the patrol, you know, it was written up that it happened, but it never did.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, this might be the first time that people are finding, you know, 50, 60, how many years later, that, oh, yeah, they didn't go on that second patrol. But at the same time, it feels trivial. It's like, well, did it really matter that they didn't go out on patrol? Like, was that the most important thing that day? Probably. You know, like, it's just the kind of, like, the narration of, like, the higher-ups never found out.
True. But again, it also goes along with the idea that you know, to quote a few good men, you know, soldiers follow orders or men die. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, what they're trying to say here is the exact opposite. That if you don't feel that the order is a just order, maybe you can save lives that way. Which I don't 100% agree with that statement. You know, because the idea is that you know, for better or for worse, the higher up officers are the ones making the final decisions of what you need to do. And if you have every low ranking either officer or just an enlisted man making those decisions, you're not going to be able to deal with the full strategy of trying to put this puzzle together, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah. And of course, you know, that is what happened with the German on. They just gave up following orders and the chain of command completely
right
down. And
but that was like, but that was out of desperation thing. Because they were losing. The Americans are not losing, so
yeah. But I mean, I think it works either way. Like, you know, you can be winning and deciding you're going to take your own idea of like which orders you want to follow. That can obviously lead to bad things. And then also on the other side, you can be know you're losing and just decide that that's why you stop following
right.
Either way, you could argue that you really kept following orders,
right?
You know, on either side. And in this case, you know, I think the viewer is in the mindset of like, well, it didn't cause issues. It wasn't, you know, and obviously the narration kind of goes on. Like, the higher ups never found out. It's almost a little bit of like, you know, getting one out.
Right.
A little bit of like,
okay.
You know, the people who think they know what's going on didn't find out. You know, so we kind of managed to get one. But yeah, under most circumstances, you would expect that soldiers would follow
orders. Right.
but it isn't the men making the choice, is it? It's Damian Lewis who makes the choice. You know, they do actually follow an order.
They're following the order, but But it's Dick Winters who's apparently not following the order here. You know.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, Damian Lewis is so lovable. You know, you just agree with him. Yeah, sure, don't.
Okay.
don't Fair go enough. Out on. Don't waste your time. Don't waste your time getting your boots wet and being cold and stuff. Just have a nice nap and you know, we'll resume the war tomorrow. We'll like give you a day off. You can be soldiers in the morning, just like have a rest tonight.
Right. And then you know, they do another great camera shot that transitions from Webster, who's turning to the, you know, he's turning to the right, and then we get a close up of both Nixon and Winters getting ready to get into their Jeep. And Nixon goes, "So we'll know more as soon as we get closer to the line." And he goes, "Oh, before I forget." And he throws something to Winters, and Winters looks at it, and he goes, "Colonel Sink's a bit unhappy with the appearance of your uniform. He says it's not befitting to your rank." And Winters opens it and goes, "Oak leaves? Congratulations, Major." And then he turns around and goes, "Gentlemen, we're ready." So it's interesting that at this point, that this is the actual point where, you know, they decide to give him, you know, his promotion. You'd think that Sink would have wanted to give it to himself.
Yeah, it did seem a little odd. But again, like the kind of, you know, talking about his uniform and like kind of not doing it in like a super direct way, kind of, you know, the little hint and then kind of, you know, giving them to him. I thought that was a nice touch. Like, it feels a little bit more realistic that there wouldn't be the kind of pomp and circumstance of having, you know, a higher up come in, but like just getting them kind of passed to him. It's kind of, it feels more like that's what would happen
on the ground.
Like, you know, rather than everyone standing around and kind of pointing out, you know, as you said in A Few Good Men, like the other thing is like, you know, don't wear like your navy whites while you're on the front line. That's what people think. Yeah. So I think maybe not drawing attention to the fact that he's the person in charge and maybe just subtly going, you know, here is he. I think that makes it a kind of.
Right. Touch, okay. Isn't it? Fair enough. And again, so it's nice to see that he's having Nixon, you know, pass over these, you know, the new rank insignia, which again is a callback to the first episode where we have Sobel, you know, who's played by David Schwimmer, having to give to Winters, you know, his promotion also. So it's like, you know, someone of a equal rank is basically giving that to you in this case, you know, instead of Sink doing it. But whatever, it's just the way it is.
Yeah. And I think also it rings true of like field promotions. Like we get three of them very quick, one after the other, don't we? So it just feels like if someone is field promoted, like it's not going to be a big thing. It's just going to be something that has to happen. So that the kind of the hierarchy is enforced, you know, that's obviously why people have things on their uniform, so that at a glance you know who's in charge. And it just feels like this is a good way to kind of make everyone know that they're in charge. You know, obviously all these men already know that, but like, on a battlefield you're going to run into people, you know, on your own side who don't have charge. So it makes sense to be like, look, you know, you've got to have these, everyone's got to know the
right
person in charge. So yeah, it just feels a bit more kind of realistic. If everyone stopped and Dale Dive kind of pop back out, as much as I'd love to see him again, it just feels like that would be a bit odd, wouldn't it? You feel that some of the higher ups have got better things to do than, you know, spend their time passing around bits of paper and
things with them. I can understand that too. It makes sense. Yeah. But it also probably means more to Winters to get this type of thing from his best friend, as opposed to from the commander. Maybe that's also part of the thinking here.
Yeah. I mean, and the funny thing is, you know, we mentioned it previously, but it you know, it calls a little bit back to Starship Troopers, which is obviously a fake war movie. But in that, you know, promotions are never a big thing. Someone just says, look, you're the new guy until you die. And they just move on with it. And I think this, you know, that is obviously a silly film, but it feels a little bit more kind of, obviously Dale Dine probably advised on that, but it feels a bit more realistic that if you just had a bunch of people killed, you just say to the next person, look, you know, you're in charge now. here are 10 people to look up to you,
right.
Get on with like killing the enemy. And it feels like that is the kind of thing that happens more, you know, particularly in this is the front line. They're on the battlefield. So you feel like they're not going to stop to have a little ceremony. They're just going to say, okay, you know, you're the guy. And the fact that it is like, a friend that is given the promotion and saying, look, you know, you're in charge. Like you say, it makes it a bit
more personal.
Feel like more interaction. Yeah. And obviously that's what TV is about. About showing
that's
these
true.
Kind of personal interactions. So it makes sense to kind of,
right.
You know, to play it like that.
All right. Is there anything else you want to say about this 5-minute segment?
No. You know, up to this point, the 15 minutes I've seen, like, wonderfully shot. So many great actors. You know, like, just very kind of immersive. You know, just like a solid 15 minutes of a TV episode. It's funny because this kind of almost makes sense to kind of finish it here in terms of these 5 minutes, because we've just seen, you know, kind of the fruition of the plan for them to not go out of control, and then a bunch of promotions, and then we get a bit of narration, and then that's it. That's where we're finishing. So it felt like a good stopping point.
Right. Okay. I mean, there's a little bit more to this entire episode. I think we have like another 2-minute segment that we'll talk about tomorrow with another guest. But
felt like it rounded everything off well for me. So, you know, it's
okay, so now I'm going to ask you the question that I said on Friday I was going to ask you. So now that you've watched and discussed these 15 minutes, is that more of an impetus for you to try to find time to sit and watch the rest of this territory?
Yeah, and I, you know what, I think in my head, I because obviously they've done follow-up shows, haven't they, with the Pacific and the one about the guys.
Masters of the Air.
Yeah. So
right,
I thought that this was more than just, like, I thought this was more than one series for some reason in my head. And so seeing that it is only, how many episodes is it, like 10 or 11 episodes?
10. 10. 10 episodes.
Yeah, so that's not a huge commitment, is it? So yeah, you know, like, it's going to be weird rewatching this episode and seeing these 15 minutes that I've talked about, because, you know, it's that thing with, like, minute by minute, isn't it? Like, you know, when you've done the podcast, like, you see each minute in a different way. You know, if
you're saying I should be concerned that you're going to rewatch it and then call me and say I want to re-record those episodes.
Yeah, now I've got full context.
I have other insights.
Yeah, I'm 25 years late to this, but yeah, it seems like it'd be like an interesting show. So you know, I'd certainly attempt to try and you know, get around and watch the rest of it. Certainly, I you know, reading the synopsis for the episodes that follow this. Like, did I read right that they like invade his house or something? In like an upcoming episode, yeah. So like that you know, that like it's always like that kind of stuff is always interesting. So that, you know, being interested to see how they tackle that. So yeah, you know, I'll make an effort. Let's say that.
Okay, I appreciate that. It's for you, not for me.
Yeah. No. Well. Yeah. No. Well. Like. Yeah. I've enjoyed these 15 minutes. So I think I would probably. But like you say, like 700 people in this thing, and somewhere along there is apparently Simon Pegg is in it. So, yeah.
Yes, he is. Simon Pegg is in the first episode. You'll see.
Yeah. So there's like a lot of people that I already know. So yeah, it should be an easy.
Okay. So I would love to hear from you after you've seen them to give me your opinion on that. All right. So today's segment is Oh Brother, where my guests will give their top five. Movie Brothers. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
I mean, like I wouldn't say that these are good brothers, but that, you know, we're starting with American History X. You know, Edward Furlong and Ed Norton. They're both called Edward. This is the first time in like maybe 30 years after seeing that film and watching it a number of times, I realized both of the main actors are called Edward. maybe because I never
even thought about that. So yeah. you're one step ahead of me on that.
Yeah, I mean I call him Ed Norton, don't I? So I wouldn't put that together with Edward Furlong. But yeah, like, you know, it's an intense film, and obviously Edward Norton's great performance, and Edward Furlong is pretty good in it as well.
Yeah.
So, and obviously has some you know, World War II connotations, but just in a positive way.
Yes, there are some.
So that'd be probably my number five. And if I'm going to pick a number four, I'm not sure if you've ever seen this film, but I've watched it quite a few times. It was actually a huge box office flop. It's called The Brothers Solomon, and
Yeah,
it has.
I've seen it. I wasn't a fan.
It, I mean, I love Will Arnett. And again, this is another one where both of them were called Will, because it was Will Forte as well. I don't, why am I picking films where both of the brothers have the same name? The actors that. But yeah, so I mean, I you know, it's a goofy comedy. The premise is kind of insane, and it. I think it's like, I don't know if it's the only film, but it's certainly the last film that was directed by Bob Odenkirk, and it was such a huge flop that he hasn't directed anything since. But then his career has had such a resurgence, with Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and stuff since The Brothers Solomon. Maybe at some point in the future he might direct again. To date, that remains the last thing he directed. And then I would say, probably a film that a lot of people will go to in terms of the brothers, Warrior. Which is like the, is it like MMA, isn't it? The with Is it Tom Hardy and I want to say Joel Edgerton?
You're talking about Warrior.
Yeah, Warrior. About the two brothers who like who end up. They end up. I don't want to spoil the end of it, but they end up in
Yeah,
like.
no, don't give it away. I mean, I've seen it, but don't give it away to anyone who hasn't seen
They're both like MMA fighters, aren't they? They kind of like they don't get on and stuff like that. So that's probably a good one. And then the last two I realize are both musical. Which is A Star Is Born with Bradley Cooper and the guy who is it. Well, he's the mayor on Family Guy, but he was, well, he's
You're
also
talking about oh
in the Big Lebowski. He plays Slim.
I can't believe I can't think of his name right now offhand.
But those two, because obviously Bradley Cooper is basically imitating this other guy, isn't he? Like when he's talking. So when you see scenes of them together, they're both basically putting on the same voice, and it's kind of funny.
Well, because they're brothers. Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott, yeah, of course, with the with the mustache. I
Yes.
think he has the mustache in A Star Is Born. Just, the weirdest thing in the world is to see Sam Elliott without his mustache.
He's in one movie without a mustache.
A shocking sight, no doubt, I assume, because I don't think I've ever seen him in anything. And of course, that mustache is fantastic in Big Lebowski. It's almost a separate
Yes.
character.
Do you have any idea what movie it is that he does not have a mustache in?
He doesn't have. Is it either? Is it? Oh, I can't, oh, where there? Is it The Contender?
Yes.
Yes, there we
I love
go.
The Contender. Yes.
I do as well. I've watched that quite a bit on DVD.
Me too.
Great performance from Gary Oldman. He
Great
vanishes
performance
into the role.
by everyone there.
Oh, even Christian Slater, one of the
And
characters
Jeff
in.
Bridges is also great there too. As
Yes, and speaking of Jeff Bridges, thank you very much, Rob. That is a perfect segue to possibly my number. I would say my number one, and I know I've just mentioned the Big Lebowski, so obviously Jeff Bridges on everyone's mind. But obviously the Fabulous Baker Boy, probably because obviously it's his real life. I think the only time that they appear in the film together, the Bridges boys.
I'm not sure about that. That
Yeah,
it might be true, but I don't know.
I can't think of anything since, because like that, that was kind of early Jeff Bridges one, but kind of late Beau Bridges. I'm not sure that Beau Bridges has done much, kind of many big films since then. But obviously Jeff Bridges has done tons of stuff since then. But yeah, like actual brothers playing brothers on screen, always a favorite thing, isn't it, to see? Puzzling that in a number of films from Paul, no, from Wes Anderson, that he has the Wilson brothers, but they've never played brothers. Like they're in the Royal Tenenbaums, and yet they do not play brothers. And Ben Stiller instead plays the brother. I'm not saying that's a top five brothers film for me, because but the fact that they are the only two brothers, they're not actually brothers, like Ben Stiller and Luke Wilson. You have Owen Wilson right there. Why not? It's just a puzzling casting mystery, isn't it? You watch that film, and you're like they're so obviously brothers, and yet you have him not playing the brother. It's But yeah, no, Fabulous Baker Boys. obviously, you know, career making for Michelle Pfeiffer, you know, just a wonderful, perfect role. But people overlook the fact that, you know, Bo is great in that. Like, you know, people love Jeff, but you know, Bo Bridges is the one to watch in that because he has the kind of the gritty reality of like the brother who's in charge and responsible. And, you know, maybe it's because I'm an older brother myself. You know, that's who I kind of identify. You know, Jeff Bridges is allowed to kind of get away with whatever he wants, but Bo Bridges has got to kind of be the kind of solid brother.
Right.
Yeah.
I did a quick search. Fabulous Baker Boys is, you are correct. It is the only feature film that they have been in together. There was a TV show where they had screen time together, but that was when they were younger in the early 70s or something like that.
Yeah, I think that was kind of almost the selling point, wasn't it, when it came
yeah.
out?
Yeah.
I was a lot younger when it came out, so I can't say I remember like the.
I think Michelle Pfeiffer was part of the selling point there, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because obviously that scene, you know, the scene where she's on the piano got a lot
yes.
of play, but I think. Of this is, you know, here are two. I could imagine it in the trailer now. So, you know, the Bridges brothers are, you know, the Fabulous Baker Boys. Like, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
And obviously, you know, pair of Nepo babies. But the thing is, Lloyd Bridges is such a fun person, and obviously Jeff Bridges, you know, like the dude sealed his reputation. So nobody minds, do they?
Right. Nah.
If you're a Jeff or a Beau, people are like, yeah, that's fine. Just, you know. You know, Lloyd Bridges paid his dues. They can be Nepo babies.
That's true.
But yeah, you know, if people haven't seen Fabulous Baker Boys, I would, you know, I would highly recommend it. It is, you know, I can't remember who the director or I think the writer of it ended up writing like half the Harry Potter or something, and the director, I can't remember what he went in to do. But like, it's really weird because it's like a career highlight for basically everybody. You know, but apart from like the writer, director, and Beau Bridges, like the people who put the kind of time in, you know, as I said, Jeff Bridges gets to do whatever he wants in that film, and Michelle Pfeiffer's wonderful, and then they're the ones who kind of they've had the careers. But yeah, it's just and again, you know, like I don't want to get into the state of cinema.
It was directed by Steve Kloves.
Yeah, I can't think of anything he's done since, like. Has he done anything particularly?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, you're right. Well, he is connected to Harry Potter. Very good. Wow, very interesting. He wrote Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. He wrote Wonder Boys. He wrote Flesh and Blood. He wrote the screenplay for Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore. The screenplay for The Amazing Spider-Man. How many Harry Potter movies? He did a lot of Harry Potter movies that he did this screen.
I think he did them all. I think that's the thing. It's like they got him on board for number one, and he basically did them all.
Harry. He did Sorcerer's Stone, Chamber of Secrets, Prisoner of Azkaban, Goblet of Fire, Half Blood Prince.
He didn't do quite all of them.
He didn't do
I
what?
There's one that's missing from that.
Between Goblet of Fire and Half Blood Prince, you have. This isn't good. I can't remember what it's called. It's the one where Sirius gets killed. I can't remember the name of it right now. I'm sure there are people screaming at their their podcatchers right now saying, "What? You're such idiots!"
I think probably because they were making them so quickly.
The Phoenix, the
Order of Phoenix.
The Order of the Phoenix, yeah, that's the
yeah.
Very strange that he didn't write that one.
I have a feeling it's probably because they were just cranking him out so quickly. Like he probably didn't have time to do two screenplays.
There was 2 years between them. Interesting. And that one was written by Michael Goldenberg. So
I can't say I know that name.
Again, now I'm very curious as to why he didn't write, what would be the reason? Maybe it's what you said, that there was just so much going on, but, he still got all the others. So you got to give him credit for that.
The other guy apparently wrote and directed the film Bed of Roses, which is a Christian story.
Oh, yeah, with what's her name?
Mary Stuart
Mary Stuart,
Masterson.
that's right. I love that movie.
And Josh Brolin.
Yes.
Yeah, in a kind of post Goonies pre Thanos role.
Yeah. So I see on IMDb it says that he didn't adapt Order of the Phoenix, but it doesn't explain why.
Okay. And of course, Josh Brolin, another Nepo baby. Christian Slater, a Nepo baby as well. And I
Yes.
don't think people
Well,
realize,
sort of,
but he.
because his mother was a casting director, but
Yeah, she. Yeah. I mean, none more Nepo than the person being in charge of casting you.
Right. You seem to like to use that phrase, Nepo baby.
Steve Close wrote. Yeah, he wrote and directed *Father's Playboy*. For some reason, I thought somebody else wrote it, but yeah, he did both. But yeah, like you know, you just don't really get films like that these days. Like just a bunch of adults just doing adult stuff. You know, so it's like a rare treat. His Jennifer Tilly is like one scene. She's amazing in it. But yeah.
So apparently, according to IMDb, it says that Steve Kloves had other commitments at that time.
Okay, but he didn't write or direct any films in between those two Harry Potter films.
More or less,
I
that's part of the problem. He
yeah.
wasn't writing anything else in between. So I don't know what.
I think the thing is, and I only gleaned from having listened to John August's podcast in the past many. I haven't listened to it for a few years, but John August is a similar guy to Steve Kloves, like a go-to guy for like blockbusters, and they tend to like throw those writers like you know the seventh or eighth draft of a film, and they work on it for like 6 months, and then it just moves on to another writer, and they basically never nothing comes. So it's probably that situation where he was probably, you know, he obviously went on to do the other Harry Potter films after the original finished, didn't he? So it's entirely possible there was a couple of blockbusters they threw his way, nothing happened.
No clue, no
You know, that's
clue.
yeah, but yeah. So you know, yeah, those are my favorite. I mean, you know, Jeff Bridges is one of my favorite actors anyway, so it's fun to see him play off Beau. And you kind of imagine that like that's how they are in real life when you see them on screen. I don't think they are. But it's fun to imagine that, you know, it's just Beau Bridges and Jeff Bridges just like getting into arguments like on a film
That's
set.
right. All right, excellent. That was a great rabbit hole. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that. Okay, now we will play the daily game of name that World War II movie. So
Okay.
let's spin the wheel and see what we get. And around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay, I can pretty much guarantee that you have never seen this one.
Okay.
this is a pretty obscure one, but it was good.
Okay.
All right, this is a movie from 1968 starring Paul Newman. Okay,
Okay.
as a criminal or an escape artist who is sent across enemy lines to be captured by the Germans and sent to a prison where a number of Allied brigadier generals have been captured in order to help them break out.
Okay. 1968.
Yes, starring Paul Newman.
I mean, I think the only like 60s Paul Newman film that I know is like Cool Hand Luke. And I don't even know what the setting of Cool Hand Luke is. I just know they eat a bunch of
This is
apples.
not Cool Hand Luke. Cool Hand
No.
Luke, I think, was in
That's
66, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's probably before 68, isn't
No,
it?
sorry, it was 67. Cool Hand Luke was 67. It was the year before.
Yeah, and I don't know, like all I know from that film is that where he
Yes, he has to eat like 50
eats a
eggs
bunch
or
of
something
eggs.
like that. 50 horrible eggs.
Yeah. So that's all. That's you know that's all I know about that film, and that's probably the most I know about Paul Newman in the
Ah,
60s.
okay. So the name of this movie is the Secret War of Harry Frigg.
Okay.
It was a movie I came across a few years ago, and it was actually quite fascinating. You know, especially being a fan of The Great Escape like I am, to see another type of escape movie, which is more of a comedy, basically. Where this whole idea that he has to go save these generals who are and break them out of a prison of a I think they're being held in a castle or something like that. I'm trying to remember. Whatever. It was interesting. It was so okay, that
Okay.
is that movie.
The Secret Life of
Harry Frigg.
The poster on it for Letterboxd is very, very airbrushed. It doesn't even really look like Paul
What do you
Newman.
expect from that time?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I straight away on Letterboxd, I see like a 1-star review and a 2-star review as being two of the most popular. So, yeah, it's almost like that. I do like the films in the like 60s and 70s where they have like that's a very specific premise, is it? Of like a con man sent in to break these people out. It's like that guy like trains the dolphin to see like unwittingly kill the president. I don't know what that film is, but that's like the tagline on the poster. But yeah, like The Secret Life of Harry Frigg, did you say?
Frigg.
Frigg. Yeah, like I do like a film with a very long title. But yeah, my knowledge of Paul, like the only, obviously, I watched Road to Perdition with Paul Newman in and Tom Hanks. Another film where Tom Hanks actually died,
That's true, but
famously.
it was post Saving Private Ryan, so it's okay. The
It
movie
was,
you're talking about is The Day of the Dolphin,
yes, yeah. Unwittingly, he trained a
which I've
dolphin to
seen
kill the
also.
president.
It was interesting.
Yeah. But like I do enjoy like films with like slightly odd premises like that. But taking a look at the reviews on Letterboxd, I don't think I'll be checking out that
That's
film.
true.
No, I guess my knowledge of World War II films, as we found out in these last few episodes, is not
Okay,
that
but
broad.
I've given you some movies to add to your list. There you
So I mean, I was trying to think of like, because obviously you sent me the preparation for this. I'm like, what World War II films have I seen in recent memory? And I did last year. I did rewatch at the cinema because they put it back on, which is great. And I saw Zone of Interest a couple of times in cinema as well, haunting film. But I was thinking like those are probably the only like other than like Jojo Rabbit like 5 or 6 years ago. Those are probably the only like World War II themed films that I've seen at the cinema for like, quite a while. So, and I'm sure obviously now that I'm, obviously now I'm aware of it, I'm gonna have to watch Greyhound 2 once that comes out, whenever that does come out. Which has also got Stephen Graham in, who I think was in, was he in Band of
I
Brothers,
think he
Stephen
was.
Graham? Yeah. So there you go. He probably, he probably got the part because of Band of Brothers.
You never know. You
Tom
never
Hanks
know.
likes to move.
It's very possible.
Yeah. But I mean, he's all Stephen Graham has also got a lot of kind of acclaim in the last couple of years for some of the stuff he's
Right.
done as well. So, but yeah, it's weird because like the first one was only like Greyhound 1 only on Apple, I think.
Because it came out during the pandemic.
So, but it's weird because like the things that like Playtone produces, which I think Band of Brothers are like one of the early things, but was produced might even be one like after around the time of my Big Fat Greek Wedding, like around that time, Playtone was like set up. This is like one this you know this TV show is one of the first big things that
Right.
they did.
It's true.
But not everything that Tom Hanks does is produced by Playtone, so I find it weird like Greyhound was one of those things that was
Well,
produced
again,
by
it's Tom
Playtone.
Hanks and it's World War II. So, it makes sense that he would want to produce that.
But yeah, no, this has been great like 15 minutes of this thing, and obviously we've managed to expose the fact that I know very
Nah,
World War
you're good,
II.
you're good. All right, so
when it comes to the trivia. I'm you know, I've got a broad idea of stuff, but you know, when it comes to the kind of the trivial parts, I think I'm slightly
Not
less,
a problem, Darren. It
you
was perfect.
know,
Perfect. All right, so would you like to
Wonderful.
for one final time tell people where they can find Darren?
Yeah, I mean, aside from, you know, Tom Hanks and obviously talking about Prince, you know, as we've discussed before, you know, another podcast that I did I mean, I've got 14 or 15. I'm like you, Rob, you know,
Why
all
is
of
it
that
one
kind of stuff.
podcast? It's just
Too many to
I just
list.
mix it up.
I know. But yeah, so I also did talk about the TV show Arrested Development, you know, called the podcast was called I Made a Huge Mistake, which I didn't because I, you know, I love the first three seasons of that, and then things kind of went off the rails a little bit for the later stuff. So if you want to hear me talking about more about TV shows, then you can find that wherever you find podcasts. There is another podcast with that same name, but mine is the one with the very bright orange artwork. It's very easy to spot.
Excellent. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, Darren, thank you very much for joining me for these past three episodes. And I am very happy that I've seemed to have somewhat convinced you to go and find some time to start watching the whole series.
Yes.
So I will be back tomorrow with another guest, but until then, curry!
Hurry.